Greetings, everyone. This is Christina Turin. We had a wonderful call this morning. I'm going to open the mic right now to Bambi Niles. Bambi, didn't we have an amazing call this morning with the European group?
It was terrific. The discussion was in-depth and enlightening, and I was just so glad to be a part of it. Thank you so much, Tina.
Welcome. I thought maybe it was one of the most interesting conference calls that we had ever had. So I'm hoping everybody will end up listening to that Group 1 call when I get it posted.
I would suggest that because it truly was enlightening.
And everybody's call, everybody's announcement or question came through really clear, and that doesn't always happen, so that was really great too.
That's true. That's an added blessing.
Well, thank you, Bambi. I know you're sitting up there with 4 inches of snow on the ground, and I'm sitting here in Maui with the palm trees decorated like Christmas trees, which is still very hard for me to get used to, but I'll be heading back to California on Wednesday, and I am told we're going to have a snowstorm when we get home.
Oh, boy. It'll be white for Christmas.
Got it. Well, thank you, Bambi. I'm going to turn off your mic right now, so if you're still working on your Christmas cookies and everything, you can clack your dishes away, okay?
Thank you so much. I will be here.
Okay, and just push number 1 if you need to chime in with anything, okay?
Sure, you bet.
Right now, I'd like to open the mic to Jeff Volk, who is our keynote speaker. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, Tina. I'm doing well.
Okay, you're coming across a little bit on the soft side, so I'm going to strain a little bit to hear you. So if there's any way that you can get a little bit closer to your mic, that might be of help.
Let me see if this helps at all. Does this help at all?
Yeah, that does. That helps a lot.
Good.
So, Jeff, usually what we do at the beginning of each call is I open up the mic and I just have everybody say their name and where they're from. And because we have quite a few people, I'm just going to ask them not to get into they'll say their name, where they're from, and then you wanted to know if they had a specific question to ask you, right?
No, not exactly. What I was hoping is I had a contact with Ginny earlier, and she, you know, said that she was so fascinated with cymatics and all sorts of stuff, but she didn't get very specific. So what I was hoping is, with people having seen the videos and perhaps done a little reading on the website, if there were a specific topic or aspect of cymatics that they were either particularly curious about or found particularly relevant to their work as a harp therapist, and I'm stressing the latter. But, you know, if there's something that's really fascinating and you just want to briefly ask or mention about it. So this would just give me sort of like a shotgun effect of things that I could speak to during our next 45 minutes.
Okay, so let's leave it this way. I'll open up each person's mic. They'll say their name, where they're from, and meanwhile, everybody will be thinking about what you just talked about. And then we'll go back and then...
It doesn't need to be a question. It could just be something that you're particularly interested in or an insight or something that you see that cymatics relates really well in this area. So it'll just give me a little something to go off of.
Okay. Well, let's do the names first and where they're from, and then we'll go with that, okay?
Sure.
So the first person I'm going to call on is Libby Gilroy. I already said her name. So Libby, just end up telling us where you're from.
Hi, I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to call on Terry. And Terry Harper, where are you from?
Dallas, Texas.
Okay. And Stephanie Evans, where are you from, Stephanie?
Los Angeles, California.
Wonderful. And Colette McLeod, where are you from?
I'm from Red Deer, Alberta.
Lovely. And Kathleen Froom?
I'm from Monterey, Massachusetts.
Wonderful. Maria Nunez?
Hi, I'm from Seattle, Washington.
Great. And if I don't pronounce anybody's name right, correct me after, okay? Ginny Ullman.
Hi, Jenny Ullman from Asheville, North Carolina, and Jeff, it's great to hear you. Yeah, I do have questions, but I don't want to hog the line, so I'll just sit back and listen to you.
I'll tell you what, when we get finished here, I'll call on you first, and we'll just start in with your questions, okay?
All right, thank you.
Okay. And let's go to Linda Hammond. You have a mic.
Hi, Linda Hammond from Leesport, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia.
And Joy, you have the mic.
Hi, I'm from Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Joy Indomenico, she's a music therapist. And Bev Tack is one of our mentors. Bev, you have the mic.
I do, and it's actually Tyke, as in Little Tyke. And I'm from Placerville, California.
Okay. And Jennifer Reed, you have the mic.
I'm in St. Charles, Illinois right now.
One of three different places that you're usually between.
I also have a question for Jeff when we get to that.
Okay. What I'll do at the end is I'll ask anybody who has questions to push number one on their keypad, okay?
Sure.
And let's go next to Barbara Irvin. You have the mic.
Hi, I'm from Oregon, Ashland, Oregon. I'm actually calling from Hawaii today.
Ooh, which island?
I'm on Oahu, Hawaiian Eye.
Well, you got bigger waves than we do here. Okay, it's pretty windy. Okay, let's go to Hannah Helverson. You have the mic. Just a minute. Here, you've got the mic.
Hi, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
Lovely. And we have, is it Lila or Lila Scoville?
Hi, I pronounce it Lila, but I'll answer to anything that sounds like that. And I'm in San Marcos, California.
Lovely. And next we have Diane Clark.
And I am in Lake Mills, Iowa.
Okay. Marilyn Schechter, you have the mic.
Hi, everyone. I'm from Edmonton, Alberta.
Great. Here's one that will probably catch me. Lynn Sorsa, you have the mic?
Sorsa. That's okay, Tina. It's Searsha. It's Lynn Searsha, and I'm Clifton County. I know, you'd never get from the spelling. See it? Clifton County, Galway, and I'm in New Jersey now for the winter. I finally changed homes for a little while.
Nice. Okay. And I think I finally got this next one right. Is Bernice Musalem. Did I get that right, Bernice?
Yes, you did, Christina. Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm in Warnock, British Columbia, Canada.
Great. And then we have Christina Tan. You have the mic? We don't have Christina coming through, and I think Christina is... try again, Christina. I think you might be coming through. No, it's not coming through. We'll try her later, okay? And Jennifer Ellis, you have the mic.
Hi, I'm from Moorhead, Minnesota.
Okay. And Ryan Villamore.
Hi, Manila, Philippines.
He's from the Philippines. And let's see, Michelle Therese Scott, you have the mic.
Hello, I'm from Fullerton, California.
Lovely. And Kathy Casley, you have the mic.
Hi, I'm in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Nice. And Sharon Stowe, who is one of our mentors, you have the mic.
Good evening, everybody. Sharon Stowe in Tampa here.
Wonderful. Okay, now if anybody came on... Well, I was saying that somewhere you probably got pushed into another category. But anyways, Jeff, we have quite an audience out there for you tonight.
Yeah, and I'm happy that not everyone's in the tropics, or I'd be really jealous.
Okay, now let's go to our next part here. We're going to ask if you have any insights, any questions, or experiences with the topic that we've been on with cymatics and the science of sound. And you can push number one on your keypad, and we'll call upon you. And first we'll start with Jenny Oman, since she had contacted Jeff and had some questions. So, Jenny, you have the mic right now.
Well, thank you, Jeff. First of all, I just want to say thank you for your amazing efforts to preserve the work of Hans Jenny and to keep it going so it can be continued. And getting back to you, your emails about what excites me most about this, aside from everything about it, I loved on the videos, I loved seeing the chaos of particles as they transition from one pattern to another. And yet, to me, I don't think of it as true chaos, as to me it would seem that each particle is just waiting in kind of a limbo vibration to know which path it is going to move to next, kind of like a planned chaos or an appropriate chaos, I guess. When I see these visuals of what is actually happening with these shapes and patterns, realizing that it is having this effect on each cell in our body and each section of our DNA, it's just amazing to me. I just don't understand why everybody is just not talking about this worldwide and why it's not on the front page of the news all the time. I guess one of the questions, many questions I had is, I was really taken by Stephen Halpern's the Om chant that apparently was done in the pyramid in Egypt. And I was wondering if you had any specifics on how that was done, if you witnessed it at all. But when I saw when the harmony was added to the Om, the basic Om, it would produce a double circle that just was amazing to me. And is that called a double circle, or I think somebody referred to it as an ellipse?
Yeah. John Reed mentioned that the form that took place is an ellipse, and that's just an elongated circle. It's a circle that has two centers, two foci, instead of just one.
Yeah. Well, it certainly makes sense to be harmonic when you add a harmony. So I love it. And I'd be interested at some point tonight, my question would be, how did you first get involved in this amazing work? And my second question is, what are the things that you are studying now and finding out about now? Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I'm not going to.
You want to take that, Jeff, and go with it?
Yeah. What I'd like to do is I'd like to hear from everyone who's got questions, and then I'll know where to go.
Okay. Well, I would like to say a couple things in response to Jenny, because we touched on it in the first class. And there are some things that I want to make sure I get over to this group right now. So one of the things that we were talking about in the group one is the metaphor of going from one beautiful design to the next beautiful design. And I like Jenny's way of saying that. It's sort of like it's being held in limbo rather than chaos. All around it looks like chaos. And I was really struck with Jeff's talk a couple years ago, Jeff, when you were talking about that. And I was thinking that there are different periods of time in our life where it's just absolutely beautiful. You know, we're in love, everything's just floating along, just gorgeous, and you keep thinking, oh, life is too good to be true, something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, something does happen, and it's truly chaotic. And it's like all of those sand pebbles, granules on the plate, and they're just trying to figure out where they're going to go next. And life is like that. And all of a sudden, three chaos and turmoil, and out of that, it ends up coming into a new state of being. Things shift, they change, they become beautiful again, and even more intricate patterns happen. You know, grandchildren are added to the picture or something like that. But we talked about that a lot this morning on the group one, is that everything can just be seen through this whole thing about sound vibrations. And you can have it as a metaphor for your life. One of the things I wanted to make sure to say is that you'll be reading a book called Music and Soul Making by Barbara Kroll. And Barbara said she only wants you to report on the first and second chapter and the last chapter when she talks about chaos theory. It's an absolutely fascinating chapter, and it's leading into her new work once she retires from her job. And especially, the book is pretty heavy duty. It's not an easy reading book. And so for anybody who speaks another language, you might want to go online, and there's a downloadable form of that, which is not as expensive as buying the book itself, but it is truly a book to have in your collection. It tells everything about the science of sound all through there. So I just wanted to get that information out. Now, what Ginny just said raises another question for me, Jeff, that you want to put into your back pocket. I see we've got about 4 or 5 more people here who have questions. But my question would be, when you're talking about the Om in that double circle, is there a certain pitch that that Om should be sung to in order to get that double circle? So that would be my question for you. So let's go on now to Colette McLeod and see if she has an insight or a question for you. Colette, you have the mic.
Hi. I just wanted to just add to something that you had said, of course, about the chaos theory, and it really applies to the healing crisis as well, which is definitely a metaphor in my life at this time. But it's been amazing, and I just wanted to say, Jeff, that I found your videos and your readings very fascinating. I don't have a question. I want more of information I'm just asking you to elaborate more on the relevance with the golden mean ratio. That's something that I find very interesting, but I'd like a little bit more solidity on it, if I could.
Okay, I can answer that one right now really quickly. It's a book called The Power of Limits by Gyorgy Doxy. That will give you more than you will ever want to know about the golden mean ratio. You can spend the rest of your life studying that one book.
The Power of Minutes?
Limits, L-I-M-I-T.
Limits. Okay, and who was the author, Jeff?
Gyorgy, G-Y-O-R-G-Y, Doxy, D-O-C-Z-I. I'm not really that much in the retail business any longer, but I do carry that book. So if you can't find it, contact Tina, and she'll get in touch with me, and I can make sure you have it. I keep that one in stock because it's just an amazing book.
Do you still have your business where they can order it straight from you? Can you tell them what that is?
Yes. I do that on a limited basis now. My website is cymaticsource.com, and if you go to the order page, you'll see that you have to fax in an order form. That's how out of the retail business I am these days. So, you know, if there's something that you can't get elsewhere and you really want to get it, feel free to contact me. You can email me right off the homepage of the website. There's a contact us thing right in the very beginning on the homepage.
It's cymaticsource.com, folks. You can go straight to him and bypass me. You can probably get to him. Okay. Let's go on to Terry Harper, and you have the mic, Terry.
Thank you, Christina. Hi, Jeff. I am very new to cymatics and found all of this extremely fascinating. And my question may be just a little out of the box, but as I watched the videos, I was very fascinated by the images. And being also a fiber artist, I started to see the images in terms of their ability to also stimulate healing factors within individuals, and that's actually how I produce my art. And so my question to you is about the sound of movement, if you will, and how as a therapeutic practitioner, my movement while playing, how if at all that has an impact on the patient's or the client's ability to actualize the sounds that they're receiving.
Wonderful. I'll be happy to speak to that.
Okay. Thank you, Terry. And let's go on to Linda Hammond and see what she has to say.
Again, I'm very fascinated, too, by what the reading was about and your videos. I'm wondering, is there any way we can duplicate some of these designs and play at home and create them at home on a flat surface like you had there with our harp? I know a few years ago I sat in front of the TV and played the harp, and when I looked at the TV through the strings, I could see the harp strings vibrating.
That's quite a visual when that happens. If you hold your harp in front of the television screen, you really get to see big waves going on the harp strings.
Sure.
Recreating the images, you're wondering how one can do that at home?
Yeah, if there's anything we can do at home, I'm just curious.
Okay, we'll put that into the mix, Jeff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And let's go to Jennifer Reed.
I think I'm going to pass, Christina. My question was, I think the following pages I was confused with the cancer of the impact music had on it. And I think I'm in the wrong section.
I don't think so. I wanted to address that too. Again, that was a topic that we got into on the Group 1 call this morning, was being able to understand that cymatics and how everything is moving, sound is moving, and when that moves, it's bound to set off something with a sympathetic vibration, which happens in the body. And in the program that I took with Susan Borg, resonant kinesiology, we studied how all of those different sounds affect different parts of the body. And we could very much feel the sound going into the bones, like into the leg bones or into the colon. And it was a little bit harder to feel it going into some of the other organs that were deeper embedded. But somebody this morning was talking about how piercing it is when you hear a honking horn. And, you know, it's very irritating. Well, that's one of the reasons why horns are honking or fire alarms or sirens. Usually they've got two different notes going at the same time because they're trying to get your attention, and it can be very irritating. And then the question becomes, when you have certain sounds that we play on the harp going to a person's body, then the question then becomes, let's say you're playing a tone that goes to their liver, and they've got cancer of the liver. And is it going to actually vibrate the cancer cells and cause them to disperse and go further out, or is it going to contain them? And that we got into a fascinating discussion this morning on intention and the work of Dr. Emoto, William Tiller, Larry Dossey. All these people that have been doing in work on intention, distant healing, working with cancerous cells and petri dishes, giving one positive intention and the other one just ignoring. So I think that is very appropriate in the course of cymatics, because cymatics is showing us the science of it all, but what are the applications, right, Jeff?
I would not say right or wrong to that question. You covered a lot of ground. But what I would say is I much prefer when you're a therapeutic musician that you're playing for the person, not against the disease.
Absolutely.
So instead of taking the, what is the medical approach, the combative medical approach, I really feel the strength of this type of approach. And I'm not talking about cymatics here. I'm talking about musical therapies of all types, is that you're dealing with a milieu of emotion, psychology, geometry, mathematics. There's just so many different influences there. And to think that we can mentally dissect one effect for one note or one frequency, that's a bit risky for my way of thinking. It sounds a little bit too much like, you know, a pharmaceutical approach. And I don't think that's the model to, I don't think that's the most effective model to carry in interactions with something as diverse and multifaceted as music and the human psyche, the human body, the human psyche soma.
So let me input a little bit more of the conversation we had this morning. In fact, I think I'll make sure that you get a copy of it, Jeff. So when we are working with resonant tone and finding a person's resonant tone, we're using a lot of different ways to do this. And one of the ways is finding the frequency of their voice, which could be an overtone. It could be a second overtone, first overtone, even a third overtone of the root of their resonant tone. And when we find that, we then determine, and we have a whole procedure of how to find a person's resonant tone. And when that happens, it's very different than just somebody having learned something on the harp, maybe Greensleeves, and they played it and they performed it and they were the entertainer. But when we actually harmonize with that person with what is their overall resonance, that's when the magic happens in our work. That's when the person kind of goes into almost like a trance. They go into the zone, which HeartMath talks about. If you can get into that zone and breathe deeper and bring in the oxygen and bathe all the cells with oxygen, that's where the healing happens. Now, I spent quite a bit of time with Ani Williams, and I know you know Ani as well. And Ani's approach to what she calls resonant tone is a little bit different. She takes it from the point of view where when you're born, you have an astrological chart and you have all of these things that are present in your chart, but there's usually something that's not present. And what they do is they look at the astrological chart and they try to find what is it that's missing so that they give you that tone to work with so that you then become whole, having all of the tones within your being. And it's a very different approach to resonance than what I learned with Susan Borg. And I think one of the people who called in from Dublin today, she said, I do a lot of astrological work. She says, I would not be able to go into a patient's room and automatically say, what time were you born on which day, figure out what they were missing and work with it. And whereas in the form that we're working with, you go in and you match the person where they're at, and it's almost like amplifying their resonance that's in harmony with them. So that was a very fascinating conversation we had this morning. So, Jeff, we don't have any more hands. Oh, wait, we do. We have one more hand raised here. This is from Ryan in the Philippines. Ryan, you have the mic?
Hi, Jeff. My question is it possible to transfer your energy as an intention in cymatics, like the research of Dr. Emoto in the water memory? Like, for example, is it possible to influence the movement of cymatics to intention? Yeah.
Okay, good questions.
And we have one more. This is from Bernice, her question. Bernice?
Thank you, Christina, and thank you, Jeff, for your wonderful work. I'm just also so fascinated by it, and I have been wishing I could just hibernate and just keep studying this. But one of the things I was curious about, again, is intention, and I'm wondering if you have done any studies that show the difference intention can make, like if I play something and I just play it without any particular intention versus if I play it with a specific intention of helping or trying to help someone, is there a different pattern that is seen? Does intention change the frequency and then the pattern? I was curious about that.
And this is 30 minutes to talk about all of these. At any point, if you want to put out a question, put the question out. If anybody has a comment in the conversation that he's doing, press number one, and I'll let you take it away. Jeff?
Okay, well, I've got a page full of notes here, which is definitely, even if I addressed just a few of these points, that could be our 30 minutes. But I think I'll address the perception, the intention and perception thing first, because I think this is very important. first of all, when we're talking about cymatics, well, let me just flip back a little bit. About a month ago, what are we at, middle of December? A little bit over a month ago, I was in Germany at the World Congress on Cymatics, the first World Congress on Cymatics. And the most astounding thing about that is that I didn't have to produce it. So it was done by a number of German people who were very deeply into esoteric science and had followed cymatics for quite a number of years and had been sort of furthering the field in a different direction or many different directions. And it married the science of flow. So we're talking about water, we're talking about air, we're talking about sound, how these different forces create flow forms in matter. And it was a very fascinating Congress. It brought many, many different perspectives together. But one of the things it really brought to my consciousness is something that Yeni said many years ago, seeing as he's been dead for many years. He said, once one's eye is open to the cymatic phenomena, you see it everywhere. And that is because the cymatic phenomena is one of oscillation or pulsation or, I guess that really sums it up, oscillation and pulsation. They're really very primal phenomena. They happen through all dimensions. So a lot of the questions here are addressing different dimensions. When you're talking about intention, you are not talking about something that can be measured by a frequency generator. You know, we don't have tools, we don't have instruments that are that sensitive. But it can be measured very clearly by the human instrument that is on the other end of that intention. And it's a very subtle reaction that they have and may not even be noticed by the practitioner. So at the risk of getting very obtuse, I would just say that we're working at so many levels when we engage in a therapeutic relationship with another person. And I would say a large part of it is unconscious. You know, I would actually make the analogy to a concert musician who is very capable. You know, they're well trained, they've studied, they've perfected technique, but when they get up on stage, they just release themselves to the magic of the music. That's when you get a truly superb performance. And you may know a lot as a practitioner, and you may have a lot of great concepts and understanding, and concepts are really important. I mean, we create our entire experience of life through concept. So that's no small thing. And concept and intention are very closely related. So I'm not diminishing this in any way, but what I am saying is the cymatic phenomena is functioning at many, many different levels, many different dimensions, the least of which is the physical one that we can see as sand spread out on a steel plate. That is just the thing that convinces us it's real because we're stuck in the concept of solidity and separation. But what is really happening when you're playing for someone. You know, Tina talked about this resonance phenomena. You're establishing resonance at many, many different levels. And I'd say the most important thing is to have a pure and open heart of engaging and wanting the highest good for all concerned, as opposed to go in there thinking that you have to understand what's wrong with the person and how to fix it. I would say that is the most important aspect of engaging in a therapeutic relationship. Because
I agree 100%.
Yeah, one comes from a very arrogant, allopathic perspective, and the other comes from a perspective of attunement. And I really feel that that's what we're striving for in all of our interactions, not just in therapeutic interactions. Actually, I think we're striving to make all of our interactions therapeutic interactions. And physician, heal thyself, you know. We need to come into the core of resonance, and that is a very simple yet very diligent and long-standing process that takes a lot of perseverance. It just takes a lot of attentiveness. So I'm going to back into some of these questions from that aspect. I guess the last two had to do with intention. Ryan from the Philippines, can you transfer energy via cymatics? You can't help but transfer energy via cymatics. That's what cymatics is showing you. Cymatics is showing you the transduction of unmanifest energy into manifest coherent form or chaotic form. It just depends what phase you're looking at. I think we need to redefine cymatics a little bit. I think we're coming from a very mechanistic perspective of what cymatics is. Cymatics is a lot more than the beautiful organic forms that you see created by vibration. It's actually a way of visualizing the ideal in matter. And when I say the ideal, what I'm talking about is, let's say, the Platonic solids are an ideal. I'm not sure if everyone knows what the Platonic solids are, but they were the five basic geometric shapes that Plato saw and then created that show how matter fits together, the pentagon, the hexagon. Actually, they're three-dimensional, so they have more complex names than that. But these are ideal forms. These are forms that exist in a ideational realm that is independent of matter. They pre-exist matter. And then when the vibration comes and the condensing happens, they show up in ice crystals, or they show up in the way that hair will grow out of the top of your head in a perfect spiral in the golden mean ratio, or they show up the way that bones grow, or the way that the crystals of the teeth form. So these are not just things that happen. They happen according to a certain pattern, and these patterns pre-exist. They are what David Bohm called the implicate order that exists within matter, but it pre-exists matter. So it's a way of just stretching your imagination a little bit to be a little bit less dense and physical. And I think that will help all of us in this process of understanding the broader implications of cymatics. So I hope I've explained that sufficiently without getting too deep into esotericism. So we have questions about cymatic therapy, which I will definitely address. Can we duplicate these patterns and designs? You can. You can buy wave drivers, they're called, through scientific companies like, oh, God, I haven't thought of these companies in a while. Let's see if I can come up with the names of them. Fisher Scientific. And if you just Google scientific, Yeah, Fisher Scientific, I know, and there are a couple of others in Massachusetts, actually. The name will come to me as we go along. But those are places where you can buy these what are called wave drivers, which are just vibrating, pulsating pistons, essentially, that create a standing wave frequency in a steel plate. So those are things you can use. Much more simply, you can use what's called a Chladni plate. And those are called Chladni plates because of the scientist who first bowed glass plates with a violin bow and strewed sand on them and got the patterns and they bore his name because he did a lot of research on it. But again, these are very simple. You will not get the most complex and gorgeous forms out of these. In order to get complex, gorgeous forms, you have to spend a lot of money and a lot of time. These are the people who have gotten these amazing forms, have been doing this research for a long time, and they've just spent an inordinate amount of time. Like, you, if you saw the work of Lauterwasser, you might understand that he was totally fascinated by tortoises, tortoise shells. And he created an absolutely perfect analog of a tortoise shell by resonating sand on a steel plate. So you just can't imagine.
Yes, I have to butt in. I wonder if that particular frequency that makes that pattern, like the tortoise shell, if it was played to the tortoise itself, if there would be a sympathetic reaction to it.
Hmm. Okay, well, that brings up a really good point, Tina. Any image that's created cymatically can be duplicated if you can recreate all of the factors that were present initially. And that means if the humidity and the temperature and all those things are roughly the same, because that will affect the pattern. Obviously, animating the same material, you know, you're not going to get the same pattern out of iron filings as you're going to get out of sand, or as you're going to get out of something that's very spherical. The more spherical the animated substance is, the more like water, the more like fluid it becomes, because it creates an electrostatic pattern. Think of like little tiny styrofoam balls if you've ever opened up a beanbag chair. You know that it's impossible to get the beanbags back in the beanbag chair because they're all staticked apart. Because they're spherical and because of the nature of styrofoam, it creates a tremendous static charge, and all of a sudden they flow around and you just cannot contain them. You can't get the cat back in the bag again. So with lycopodium powder, that's a very similar situation. That's what Hans Jenny used in a lot of his experiments. They're tiny, tiny spores of a club moss, and they have a very high electrostatic charge. So these will create a flow form that's very similar to liquid because of their electrostatic charge. They move like a liquid flow. Now, this is all to say that, of course, what you're animating, how you're animating it, and the conditions in which you're animating it have to be the same in order for you to get the same phenomena. The most important factors are the waveform you're using, and in most of this stuff, it is sine waves, simple sine waves, because they do not produce a lot of complex harmonics, which would create more of a complicated figure. You want to try and get a fairly simple figure. Long, sustained tones. But it's not just the frequency. See, that's where a lot of people make an assumption, and they think, well, it's a frequency. It's the amplitude and the frequency combined. And, of course, you have to be working with the same wave shape and the same material. But when I talked with, when I was translating or having translated Lauterwasser's book into English, I came across two images there that had the exact same frequency, and they looked very, very different. So I emailed him, and I said, I believe you have an error here, a typo. And he said, no, they're different phases. So you've even got the phase, whether something is, well, let's say you've got a water droplet sitting in a petri dish being animated by sound. It's going to be pulsing up and down, depending how complex the frequency is and how powerful the amplitude is. It's going to be pulsating up and down, at the very least, just sort of like a nipple coming up and then coming back in on itself. So if you could see it in three dimensions underneath the water, it would be convex and then concave, be going up and down. So if you were to take a picture of that at the phase where the nipple is sticking up and then take a picture of it where the nipple is flat in the water or where it's down into the water, you'd get three very, very different looking images. And you would swear it's got to be different frequencies. But it's not. It's just the phase that the thing is going through. And this is extremely important, playing the harp. Because, as you said, seeing the strings in front of the television, the reason you can see them so vividly there is because you've got an interference pattern behind you called the Wiedekind tubes. And the Viticon tubes are actually, just like your computer, they're sending a dot across the screen at a certain frequency, a certain speed. And the fact that the harp string is resonating at a frequency that is not the same as that scanning rate, that frequency, you get to see all sorts of little snapshots of how that string is vibrating. And your eye will composite that into this, sort of like looking at a bicycle wheel that's spinning under a fluorescent light. You know, because the fluorescent light is pulsing, the wheel is looking like it's not just spinning, but it's showing up. Or a strobe light. When you take a look at a strobe light, people are moving in front of a strobe light. You don't get the fluidity of the motion. You get little snapshots of the motion. And that's an artifact of the strobing being at a different phase or a different frequency to the phase of the thing that you're observing. So, you know, I don't want to get overly technical here, but it's really simple to say, oh, it's all frequency, you know, and if you have the right intent and you say the right frequency, you're going to make marshmallows turn into gold, you know. It's very hopeful thinking, and it's not at all scientific. The same thing with the om. To think that you can sing an om and get a pattern every time is very naive. The amplitude, the frequency, the pitch, the timbre of your voice, the overtones, all of those are going to affect the pattern. So when you're speaking to someone, something as simple as speaking, the tone of your voice and the intention and your ability to breathe and embody your own voice all have an amazing effect. I'm sure you've all been experienced someone who's very nasal and they talk like this. You know, there's something inside of you that just starts to shut down because it's a constricted expression. And we always are resonating with the people around us. We can't help it. So when someone is in a very constricted state, either physiologically or emotionally, we have to be very aware that we don't come into resonance with that because it's a very strong state. So there are a lot of things to think about here. And I think a very important one is to use your discriminating mind quite a bit when you come into these things that seem to solve all the problems very simply. It's very seductive to think that just a simple frequency or a simple resonance is going to solve a problem as complex as an illness that someone spent their entire life bringing to themselves. You know, these aren't things that happen in a vacuum. They happen as a result of people's karmas, their behavior patterns, their beliefs, their emotional beliefs, their beliefs about themselves, their concepts about what's possible in life. You know, all of these things affect people's health, affect all of our health and lack thereof. And they affect our ability to be successful in life. They affect our ability to even be willing to engage in another person in a deep and intimate way, which the therapeutic relationship certainly is. So, you know, these things are not simple mechanics. There are many, many levels at which they operate. And I would just encourage each and every one of you to be inquisitive rather than looking for answers. You know, answers are a form of death. The Inquisition is really where you want to be in, and you don't want to be torturing yourself with it. You want to be staying open and inquisitive, curious. At least that's my opinion. I don't mean to be so didactic about this. I had enough of that when I was in Germany. It's so funny being around all these very German people. I was the one bringing the human face to cymatics, and it was really refreshing. So I'll try to get back to that.
One of the questions that we had this morning was, when you actually are in harmony with a person and you've actually found their resonant tone and they kind of go into that zone and they're breathing deep and they're totally at peace with whatever they don't want you to stop and all of that. The question was, how long does that last? And I would say probably from my experience from working with a patient, it could be a temporary thing for an hour. The longest I've seen it last is 3 days. And that's where What I tend to do is I tend to carry my iPad or my iPod, or if I had an iPhone, I guess you can do it with that. And you can record a session with a person once you get that place of matching their breathing tempo, matching the feeling of the music. Again, it's what you're talking about. All these different things play into it. So the mood of the music, the mode that you're going to play in, the tempo of the music, and then once they start breathing deeper and the resonance with that and record that part, then that's something that they can listen to on their own after and over and over and over. You're so right when you say all of this is built up over time, and it's like it would have to be a huge, huge miracle for somebody to be absolutely healed in an instance from this. But there are ways that you can help with everything else that a person may be doing as far as diet, as far as food, the whole bit, by bringing in the quality of sound into that mixture of the healing capabilities.
Yeah, healing is really an educational process, and that's one of the things that I was so excited with Yenny's work, is the fact that he made the invisible visible. He made something that's largely unconscious, which is our perception of sound. You know, so much of our sensory input comes in through our ears, but so much of that is unconscious, whereas what comes in through our eyes goes directly into the processing aspects of the brain, which bring it much more to the forefront, literally, of our consciousness and of our brain. So to make the invisible visible allows us to see things like the progression of chaos and reintegration, which was brought up as one of the earliest questions. So maybe I'll just lead into that. In some of the beautiful work that both Yenny and Lauterwasser did, you can see that it's much easier to see it in video form than it is in the book, but Lauterwasser did a series of snapshots in the book and showed the progression of overtones that led to modes, M-O-D-E-S, just like modes of music, but in this case, a physical mode, which means a coherent pattern. So you start out with 0 hertz, and you're keeping the amplitude the same here. You're keeping the volume constant, and you are only changing the frequency, and you're animating a steel plate with sand on it. You start off just by spreading the sand on the plate, and you have a frequency generator, a digital frequency generator, so you can tell exactly the frequency that you're at. And in this particular steel plate, maybe it's the size of a small notebook or something, and a quarter of an inch thick, so they're just taking some random dimensions. You'll go up until you hit a certain frequency, and then all of a sudden, this massive sand will jiggle itself into a coherent pattern. It'll be a fairly simple pattern. Maybe it will just be one circle or a series of just a few lines on the plate. As you keep the amplitude and everything else consistent and just move the frequency, just bring the frequency up, you're going to go back into chaos again. So the sand's just going to jiggle around the plate with no apparent order. But within a very short period of time, as you keep increasing the frequency, the sand is going to reconfigure. And this time when it does, it will be at some kind of a geometric level of complexity higher than it started out. It's not just going to be the simple lines, but it will be lines taking a certain shape. And then it will go to chaos again as you bring the frequency up. And the next time, the next mode you entertain is going to be more complex, and it's actually going to be a greater articulation of that geometric pattern. So you're going to get more detail in the pattern. And then it's going to go into chaos again, and the next thing, you will see a higher order of complexity of the same pattern. So you can see the evolution of a pattern moving through phases of chaos. So what's interesting about this? There are a number of things. One is you start at a very low frequency and you move up to a higher frequency. If you graph this over the course of, say, a dozen or 15 or 20 different modes, Modes are just coherent patterns that manifest. You will get a beautiful logarithmic curve that is identical to the overtone series. So what you're actually getting is you're getting the harmonic overtone series of this steel plate, and it's a mathematical ratio of the frequency to the diameter of the plate. So it is actually the standing wave set up. So you start off with a 1-to-1, and it goes, you know, proportionally smaller and smaller. I can't guarantee you that they're all going to be, you know, 1-to-2, 1-to-3, 1-to-4, but they do take, because every plate is not an ideal substance. In order to get the exact harmonic scale, you need to have a perfectly homogeneous plate and perfectly responsive matter, and you'll never get that. So you'll get something that's close to the harmonic series, but there'll always be a logarithmic arc of how this particular plate and this particular matter responds to each other. So what? So what is, as you watch this thing happen over time, you actually see the notes, the do re mi's of that particular steel plate, and the intervals between modes get closer and closer together, which means the periods of chaos get smaller and smaller, and the complexity of the patterns get greater and greater. So, you know, this is really amazing if you think of it in terms of what is our subjective experience of this. You know, subjectively we get like a wow gee whiz experience, but if we bring it back a little bit deeper, and what I mean by subjectively, when we watch something like this happen, we have an understanding intrinsically that there is an ordered cycle of events going on here, and it's getting more complex and more intricate as the frequency goes up. So if we contemplate that a little bit, we think about our own experiences of life. Well, of course, the frequency of our lives increases constantly, both individually through the course of your life. You know, your frequency as a child is very different from your frequency as an adult. For many, many reasons. Your brain waves are moving a lot faster as an adult. You're being stimulated by much, much more things like cell phones and, you know, Wi-Fi towers and all sorts of things. I mean, there's just so much more going on in your world. The mind is much more active. We're more preoccupied. We're worried. We're constantly trying to be in 20 places at once. So clearly the frequency is amplified as we age, as we get more mature and more involved in our world. But also the frequency of our world is picking up so much. Just look at, you know, the way things were 20 years ago or 10 years ago before the internet was common knowledge and cell phones. Everybody was, you know, glued to their cell phone before everybody was glued to their cell phone. The amplitude has also picked up, the noise in the world. So we're dealing with a situation that is much more complex than anyone has ever been in before. I mean, you look back a generation, and basically at that point, people did pretty much what their parents did. You know, they were farmers, or they were, you know, food, whatever the trade was that they were in, they pretty much did a similar kind of thing or progressed very slowly, but they generally held the same job throughout their entire life. So, you know, frequency and amplitude has a very specific effect when looked at in one's own life. And that's where seeing this played out in hard matter, in a physics experiment, can really help you see that, you know, our tendency to take a snapshot of an experience and think it's supposed to stay that way forever is not a very true way of looking at the world, that everything's always pulsating. And if we happen to be in the midst of a chaotic situation, if we can just breathe into the fullness of this exquisitely crafted dilemma, which you have composed as the symphony of your life, so skillfully orchestrated for your own execution. Now, if we can recognize that, say, wait a minute, I'm creating this circumstance right now by the illusions that I'm buying into, that this is a concrete form, when in fact it's just a phase moving from one chaotic phase through a little bit of order, which I'd really like to hold on to because I like the order and I'm afraid of the chaos, and then relaxing back into it again and recognizing that we're living in chaos all the time. But within all that chaos, there are coherent forms that enable us to walk around and not walk into things, or walk around and walk into things. So it's really quite a paradox that we live in this field that's constantly oscillating, but it is very plastic, and it's malleable through things like intention, belief, the attitudes that we hold, the concepts that we adhere to. All of these things actually, well, to use a beautiful phrase of my teacher, Sri Gary Olson, he says the world in which we live, actually he says the world in which you live, has not been projected onto you, but by you. So this is profound. I mean, we're not living in a world that projects itself onto us. We're living in a world that we interact with by projecting the frequency of our attention, or the amplitude, the volume of our attention, projected through the frequency of our concepts and our feelings and thoughts about things, projects our unconscious expectations out into the world in a very analogous way to the way that unseen sounds animate inert substances into coherent forms that we would swear are standing still and solid, but in fact they're just tiny particles oscillating all the time.
Jeff, Ginny seems to have a question here. Is this a good time to pop in with a question?
Perfect.
Okay, yeah, Ginny.
Hi, Jeff. You had mentioned a definition of modes several minutes ago that I hadn't heard before. Can you repeat that?
Sure. That's a standard physics definition. A mode is in a series of forms. When you've got sand spread out on a steel plate, you have nodal points. That's N like Nancy, nodal points. And that's the point on a steel plate where there's the least amount of vibration. And then the sand tends to accumulate there at those nodal points. And that's what gives you the pattern. So they're not just, you know, single points on a plate. There's a whole mess of them. Then depending on the frequency and how it's resonating when standing waves on the plate, you will get designs along the nodal points. And that's what creates the coherent forms. So the example that I gave with a series of forms taking shape over time as the frequency is increased and the amplitude stays the same. And this is illustrated in Lauterwasser's book, Water, Sound, Images, very clearly with the frequency, the interval, and what else does he have there? He's got the frequency, the interval, and how many modes it is. Each coherent phase, as you go along, as you increase the frequency, is a mode. So the first chaotic phase yields to a mode, a very simple pattern along the points. And then it will go to chaos again, and then you'll get the second mode, and then the third mode, and the fourth mode. These aren't actually musical modes, but they correspond to the overtones, of that plate.
Wow. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Here. It's very difficult to explain these things without visuals. It's so simple if I can show you, which is why cymatics is so effective, because you can see it and you understand it and you get it intuitively. You understand that the quality of the vibration determines what shows up. I mean, a simple thing like that is it's earth-changing. It's totally...
Any other questions from anybody? You can press number one on your keypad. Okay, and I have a couple questions here. The first one is from Bernice. Bernice, you have the mic.
Oh, thank you, Christina. I've been thinking about sound and the creative power of sound, and I've been thinking about birds. And I'm just wondering what you think. Do you think that the bird song in spring, like in my part of the world, the birds are fairly quiet now, but when spring is coming, they're going to start singing a lot. And I'm wondering, are they creating things with that sound? Are they causing spring to happen?
It's very interesting. I remember a study that was done in ecosystems when animals went extinct. They had more than a ramification on the food chain. They had a ramification on the sonic symphony of that environment. And when certain insects were no longer there, certain plants had effects, and it wasn't because of them not being pollinated. It was because the frequency of their singing was no longer there. At least that's what they posited. And I thought that was just astounding that you have this whole sonic symphony that creates an ecosystem. So I think birds do definitely, they're harbingers of spring in a lot of ways. I mean, they certainly affect the human emotions, but who's to say that they don't affect all sorts of things, including, you know, the pollination or, you know, we tend to look at things so mechanistically and we say that this causes that. Well, it's a milieu. It's a sonic stew. And everyone puts their own little, well, all God's children's got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. You know, some singing out loud on the telephone wire. It's really true. It's really true.
Yeah. And let's open up the mic to Ryan. He has a question right now. Ryan?
Yes, Christina. My question is, Jeff, what if you stop changing the frequency, I mean, in the chaos form of cymatics? Does it stay in the chaos form?
Mm-hmm. Well,
if you stop changing, in the middle of generating the tone in cymatics,
mm-hmm.
for example, if you stop changing the frequency, getting it higher, does it stay
right.
in the chaos form?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting question because if you just look at things on the surface and if you hold it between coherent forms, it will stay in what we would call a chaotic phase. But I would say as long as you hold the frequency consistently, sooner or later you would be able to discern some sort of pattern there, because the frequency, even if it's in a chaotic phase, it's not in a direct whole number ratio to the size of the plate, the diameter of the plate, which is what would set up standing waves. I bet, and this has not been scientifically verified, but I bet over a period of time you would begin to find recurring patterns because you're keeping the same frequency in the same plate with the same material. You may have to use a strobe light. You may have to use a different way of visualizing it. But you are going to be eventually setting up the kind of repetition, because the frequency is actually a very repetitive thing. It's not changing. It is oscillating. It is changing, but it's not changing. It's oscillating consistently, like the jump rope going around and around and around. So it may not set up standing wave patterns that would become very obvious, but I think implicit within all chaos, there is order. Because of the very nature of substance, regardless what it is ordered or it would not exist. It has to be ordered. It has to have a neutron, an electron, and a proton. Well, it doesn't have to. It can be more simple than that, but it has to have at least a proton and an electron. Proton and neutron, I think, is what you need to have. I forget what the most simple ones are. It's been a long time since I studied chemistry. But, you know, you've got to have at least a polarity in order for anything to manifest into physical form. And to have a polarity, you have to have an oscillation. And some degree of a standing wave has got to be there to hold those two things apart. So it's a very interesting question you raised there, Ryan.
Great.
Simple answer.
Yes.
A very simple thing to conceptualize.
All right, Christina, is it okay? Can I have another one more last question?
Okay.
Jeff, I was thinking about the movement of the solar system or of the universe. Is it possible that the movement of the solar system is created by a cymatic tone, or are we in a particular frequency? I mean, this physical reality in cosmos, is it possible that there's like a tone? That's why this solar system is moving in order. Yeah.
Well, metaphysically, we would answer that with an emphatic yes. Whether that tone is something that can be measured in the realm of physics, I would say it's being measured in many, many different ways through various forms of radiational mapping in the cosmos. You know, they're seeing the way things expand is in a very orderly and repetitive fractal form. So that would imply that there is some sort of tone there. But whether you can actually call it a tone or not is, you know, when you're out in space in a vacuum, what is the tone? You know, what carries the tone? Maybe electromagnetic pulsation rather than sound pulsation. But so you have to expand your definition of what the tone is. And we can begin to start looking at tone as something like something that inspires order, inspires an orderliness in what might otherwise be seen as a random agglomeration of substance or material or a process that we cannot determine the orderliness of. You know, it could be very well that there is an implicit order, an implicate order within that substance, that when you hit it with the right frequency or you put it in the right field where there are certain influences, then all of a sudden a solar system manifests out of nothing or a galaxy. You know, it does not require an immense input of energy for this to happen. It just requires the right conditions. You know, we make a lot of suppositions that things behave the same way across time and space and out into the cosmos as they do here on Earth. And I would say that holds up to a point, but it does not hold up all the way because there's never been an atmosphere found in space, and there's never been a container that contains space like the Van Allen belt. You know, we do not have, I mean, in the big picture, we find them all over the place in space, but we don't find what's containing space. So clearly there has to be another dimension at work there, and this toroidal structure is being contained by its own gravitational field. So you have to start looking at things very differently. And I think that really has a lot of implications in the therapeutic approach, is we have to stop the habitual pattern of looking at ourselves as separate from the person that we're working with and recognizing that the most important thing to do is to come into attunement with oneself, center oneself as fully as possible, open oneself in a field of receptivity, and then the cymatic principle is going to be able to operate through you most effectively, whether you fully understand it or not. And I can guarantee you, you don't fully understand it because it's not fully understandable.
Right. Jeff, we're coming up on the finishing time here, so I'm going to let you wrap it up. I do see we have one more comment or question from Michelle, and I'm going to ask Michelle or anybody else to contact me with a question. I will send it on to you, and then you can answer it, and then I'll put it into the wrap-up when I tell people when the calls are posted, because we're running out of time right now. Why don't you take the next 5 minutes and wrap it up and kind of pull it together? We've heard a lot now about the science behind our art, and truly both go hand in hand. Science and art go together. And so why don't you take it on out, and then at the very end I'll open up the mic and everybody can say goodbye to each other.
Okay. Well, let's see. What is the most important thing I could tell you at this point? Science and art certainly was the theme of the Cymatics Congress in Germany. And there were a number of very significant scientists there, many of whom were in the fields of flow forms, like Schauberger's work, who worked with water, and Theodor Schwenk, who wrote the book Sensitive Chaos. So looking at sound as flow, as form, as dynamic, is a very creative way of engaging in both music making and just understanding what cymatics really shows us. It shows us the phenomena of sound in a way that we can relate to it, because we are sound, and at the same time we are flow. Everything flows through us, and we flow through our universe. So it's these beautiful, complex dynamics of, well, it's a reflexive experience We're observing things, and we're creating in that same observation at the same time. So it gets very vast very quickly, but at the same time it stays very simple because we can see the effects of what we do, and we feel them very directly and very immediately. And that, I think, is what we need to tune into the most, is that cymatics is a way of visualizing what we already are and what we already know. And it's not a matter of becoming anything other than we already are. It's a matter of becoming what we already are more fully through awareness and sensitivity and a fair degree of attentiveness and study. And that comes in oscillations as well. We're relaxed, then we're focused, then we're in an absorptive mode, and then we're in a very discriminating mode. So we move through all these different phases, and we find ourselves at a higher level of complexity, just like those cymatic patterns are. And then we move into a chaotic phase again, which then moves us into the opportunity to grow further. And so maybe I would wrap it up by just saying this whole thing about chaos being seen in the healing crisis, I think that was just a brilliant statement, a brilliant observation that was made early on, that indeed a person's illness can be recontextualized as a beautiful phase of chaos that's enabling something to come to consciousness that was previously unavailable to be seen. So if that can be held that way in the interaction, it turns an illness into an opportunity for transcendence. And, you know, that puts a very different spin on what healing is. We want to make sure we don't take away someone's opportunity of transcendence too soon. We want to give them the opportunity to learn from their condition. And this is true in our own discomfort as well. You know, don't run off seeking release from the discomfort or sink into that familiar den of regret. Self-pity only feeds the fires of anguish, just as rage casts the, I blew it, just as, I can't remember my own poem, just as blame casts the snare ever wider. Rather breathe into the fullness of this exquisitely crafted blemma, which you have composed as the symphony of your life, so skillfully orchestrated for your own execution.
You're quite the poet, Jeff, and you can let people know that you have books of poetry based on cymatics, and they can write to you at cymaticssource.com.
Yeah. I've got a couple. I think there's a poetry, or there's a gallery page that I have just one or two poems on the website. Most of my work has not been published, the stuff on cymatics. That will probably be a book over the next year. I've got a big project. Someone asked, what am I excited about now? I've got a big project in the works that will probably entail about 9 or 10 interviews that I did at the cymatics conference with extremely devoted researchers. And it will also work with poetry and art. And I would imagine when it gets released, they'll have a bit of music in it as well. So it's a project that you can stay tuned on. I'll have updates on my website over the next months as we get to work on it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jeff, for being with us today. This is just such a fascinating part of the work that we do and really being able to get a sense of what's behind all this amazing music that we're blessed with on this planet, to be able to come up with all different kinds of music, all different kinds of sounds, drumming sounds, harp sounds, beautiful oboe sounds. Each one has its own flavor, and each one has its own magic. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And right now, I'm going to open the mic to everybody, and they can all thank you, and have a happy holiday, everybody. You have the mic. Here you go.
Thank you, Jeff.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.